Good morning, and it's a beautiful sunny day where I am. I hope it is where you are too. It's Stephanie Staples, and we're always hoping to bring you some ideas, some insights, some information that will help you be a little happier, a little healthier, get along with people a little bit better. And later in the show, I'm going to be interviewing Jeannie Martinson. She's in from Saskatchewan, and she's the author of Generation Y and the New Work Ethic. And also, well, she's got a plethora of books, but the couple that we're going to talk about today is that one, and also Lies and Fairy Tales That Deny Women Happiness. So if you're interested in those things, which you should be, even if you're a man, you should know what denies women's happiness. listen up, because we got a good show coming up for you today. Big shout out to Tiber River, tiberriver.ca. Check them out for all your esthetician needs. And if you're online, even the website smells good, all natural products. So big thank you to them for sponsoring us. Our Mo Mondays, our Motivational Mondays, is sold out for tomorrow. But if you want to get in on the next one, it is happening on May 5th, and tickets are available at Your Life Unlimited on the events tab. So if you haven't been there, you got to check it out. We have some great local entertainment. We have 5-6 speakers, each doing about 10 minutes each. And you leave just wanting to make the world a better place and yourself a better person. And I think we need to continue immersing ourselves in inspiration and motivation. So I hope you can join us at one of our upcoming events. Mo Mondays, it's a new cool thing. Although you meet the nicest people there, you really do. Speaking of, it's kind of like TED Talks, you know, with those 10-minute bursts of inspiration. And I was listening to a TED Talk this morning. And I don't know if this has ever happened to you when you're listening to a video or PVRing something and you miss something funny. You know, maybe you're somebody's talking or you turn away for a minute, but you hear people laughing and you missed that funny moment. And I remember like going through my head going, oh, should I rewind it? Should I go hear that again? Or should I just continue on with my day? And I chose to rewind it and listen to it again. And I thought that's what I want to encourage you to do. If you miss something funny and you have an opportunity to hear it again, rewind and hear it again. It's probably worth a few seconds of your time. A lot of us we're not getting enough funny in our life. We're not getting enough laughter. So if we have an opportunity to hear something that's funny, I think we should definitely do it. And what it was that I missed was the woman had said, the majority of geniuses in the world are men. And then she said, and so are the majority of idiots. So it was worth rewinding for. I thought it was funny. Anyway, so did you know that 97.5% of statistics are made up? Yeah, I just totally made that one up. But I did recently read this interesting stats, and I'm not sure whether they're accurate or not, but it didn't really matter to me because what mattered to me was the point. And I want to share it with you. It said 25% of people will never like you no matter what you do. And 25% of people will not like you but could be persuaded to like you. And 25% of people will like you but could be persuaded not to like you. And the final 25% of people will like you and will like you no matter what. I thought that was really interesting. It really struck a chord with me, and I thought it might resonate with you as well. I know some people that sometimes the people that love me the most get the worst of me. And I know that I also spend my limited time and my limited energy and my precious resources serving the 75% and limiting my capacity to fully give to the top 25. Do the people that love you the most and matter to you the most get the worst of you sometimes too? Are you trying too hard to get people to like you, to please others whose favor you want to retain? Do we want people to like us because we're agreeable or accommodating? Maybe we should be practicing saying no to some of the requests and see if those certain groups of people will be swayed into not liking us anymore this week. Join me if you'd like and focus on bringing your A game to those people in your life who are your true champions. Give them what you need, be it your time, your energy, or even the biggest piece of dessert. It's so tempting to try and get everyone to like us, but the reality is, statistics aside, no matter how much we give or share or contribute or try, not everyone will like us. It's the sad truth, even though we're incredibly wonderful, adorable, and lovable. So that 25% that will never like us anyway, let's just agree that it's their loss, say oh, and let them go. Focus on the ones who will love you no matter what. You got thoughts on the subject? Ship me your thoughts at yourlifeunlimited.ca. I'm always interested to hear what you say. Join me coming up next. I'm with Jeannie Martinson. We've got a free event coming up if you are here in Winnipeg. If you are a family caregiver, somebody that's looking after perhaps your aging parents, or you know if you're a family caregiver or not. Most of us are, especially in that sandwich generation. So we're celebrating family caregivers. We're doing a great event with Sophia Dove, Fred Penner, Lori Mustard, and myself. And it's going to be at the Kubota Center next Monday, March 31st. So if you're interested in attending, it's absolutely free of food. Ukrainian dancers are coming out. It's going to be a great night in celebration of people who are caring for others. So it's free, but you do have to pre-register. Go to yourlifeunlimited.ca on the events tab and let me know if you're there. I'd love to see you, love to say hi. And I want to send a shout out to First Impressions Hair and Skin Team, hairandskin.ca, 1631 St. Mary's Road. Keep you looking and feeling great. So I am in the studio with Jeannie Martinson. She is author, speaker, expert in the area of leadership and diversity. You've got a lot going on, Jeannie. Thanks for fitting me in on your trip to Manitoba.
I'm happy to be here.
Well, you can check her out at martrain.org. But right now you've got a book that's been out for a little while that you're going to be redoing. Presently, it's called Lies and Fairy Tales That Deny Women Happiness. You're going to be relaunching it, updating it some, and it's going to be called Killing the Princess Myth, which is a fascinating title. So let's talk a little bit about that book and how it affects us.
Well, in the original book, Lies and Fairy Tales, I really focused on the fairy tales of Cinderella, Snow White, Beauty and the Beast, and Sleeping Beauty. And all four of those fairy tales teach women throughout their life to wait for opportunities, to wait for a man to take care of them, to expect that magically all the good things in your life are going to just appear like a fairy godmother.
Poof.
And so we don't plan our relationships. We don't plan our careers. We have expectations that it'll all turn out perfectly. And I've seen a resurgence in the last 10 years, particularly around the princess myth, and how little girls have been encouraged to identify with the princess myth. That is combined also with the fact that the Disney movies, which I was particularly looking at in context to the first book, the Lies and Fairy Tales book, was that the Disney movies have now come out on DVD and are available for young girls to watch ad nauseum. And what's challenging about that is particularly the movies since 87 that are the animated, what I call the princess movies of since 87, have really increased the number of passive words in the songs and the words that are spoken by the female characters, and have increased the level of hostility and aggression in the words sang and spoken by male characters in the Disney animated movies that are geared towards children. And so I think that we can't just assume that the world is working towards raising our children the most appropriate way. We need to be aware of the influences of media.
Interesting that Disney hasn't, they've updated the color and all that kind of the sound quality and stuff, but not really updated the where women are at part.
Well, and what's really interesting is the movies that were prior to 87 had actually stronger characters for young, the females in the movies up to 87 were stronger than the female characters since 87, which you would think logically that they have stronger characters. And you might say, well, on the surface, they seem to be in more leadership roles. But when we look at the research about looking, what are the words they sing? What are the words they say? Those are more passive for the female characters, and they are more aggressive for the male characters. So that's where the challenge is because when you play a movie over and over and over, as young children do, they sing those songs and they embed those songs. And just as we look at rap music that has, for some rap singers, have words that are really derogatory towards adult women, talking about issues about rape and that's a normal thing. Just that's embedded for teenage girls who are singing those songs. These songs that little girls sing who are 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, unless we sit down and look at what are the words in those songs that they are embedding into their belief system, we need to look at that seriously and not assume because it's Disney, it's all wonderful.
Interesting. So what would be some examples of some of these passive things? Because I'm trying to pull something to mind and I can't even.
Well, and what the researchers that looked at this latest research, it's really, they actually looked at took out all of the music part of it,
right,
and actually processed every word that every character spoke, all the male characters and all the female characters, and broke down the words into nouns, pronouns, etc., and actually looked
I'm
at
glad
words.
That's not my job.
I know. I'm glad it wasn't mine either. I'm glad I can just use our research. And really looked at what words in society we consider passive and which words we consider hostile or aggressive. And that's what they found.
Interesting. So I think that I love the part about we being more proactive about making choices and not just letting life happen. That's kind of who I am and what this whole show is about. So what kind of advice or tips or ideas have you garnered from the research, and what do you suggest for people?
Well, I think in the sense to be aware of it and to balance if you have young granddaughters, daughters, nieces, is to balance the information that they see as far as Disney movies, balance that with perhaps more positive experiences, more experiences of actual empowerment.
I guess discussion around everything. Yeah. Because when I think about those songs, I think about songs that I sang when I was young, sometimes now I'm listening to the words with an adult mind.
Frame.
And
yeah.
I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't even know what I was singing, or that was naughty, but who I didn't know at the time, mm-hmm. right? And this would be even more subtle than that.
Right. And I think part of the challenge, as I said, is over the last little while, we're seeing movies, Disney movies that are available on DVD. And so young girls can see those movies over and over and over, which embeds those belief systems, as opposed to prior to 87, particularly, if you were growing up in the 60s and 70s, you went to the movie theater, you saw that movie, and then it disappeared for a while.
Right.
And then every now and then Disney would pull it out of the vault, as they say, and remaster it and relaunch it, and then it would disappear. And so when we think about movies that reinforce certain stereotypes and certain ways of thinking, that girls should be passive and boys should be aggressive and highly assertive, aggressive and hostile, at a subconscious level, we're reinforcing that way of thinking without saying girls shouldn't speak up, boys should.
Right.
Girls should be in control of their lives. No, we're not saying that. We're saying girls should wait until a man comes into their life to save them, to turn them around, to provide them with the income to have the life they live
right.
want to live.
It's so 1950s.
Yes. And then we reinforce that from a media perspective. You look at the wives of Hollywood, the wives of Orange County, those series of basically trophy wife type of reality shows that really basically says it doesn't matter how smart I am. It doesn't matter what I achieve. It only matters that I'm beautiful and I can find the guy. And he will take care of me. And so that's a reinforcing of the Cinderella myth. We see that in movies that came out in the 80s, like the one with Richard Gere and Julia Roberts, where basically he saved her life. He turned her life around.
Yeah.
And so in the sense that we continue with this Cinderella myth that women don't have to be responsible for themselves, and then women end up in a position where now I am responsible for myself. I'm responsible maybe for 3 children because of divorce or disability or death of a spouse, and I don't have the resources, the resiliency, the skill set, the experience to do what I need to do to build a profitable life and to take care of myself and my own.
Right. I think the big thing is communication there, right? So whatever they're watching, I remember my kids were in this thing where they were watching Teen Mom. I was like, you shouldn't be watching that show. You shouldn't be watching that. And then what I realized is that I need to go watch that show with them. And then we can have a discussion about it. And then that changes everything.
Yes.
Speaking of movies, so last night was date night, and in an embarrassing decision, we went to go see the Lego Movie. Have you seen the Lego Movie?
No, not yet.
Sean, have you seen the Lego Movie? No. Well, it's great. It's a great movie. It's like a totally Your Life Unlimited movie. It's got a really great overriding theme, and there's a strong female lead, and it's all about personal. It's about personal growth, really. So everything is awesome. Yeah, it's pretty good. Check it out. No singing on your show. Stop singing.
Well, we have been talking about movie songs. So if somehow a soundtrack makes its way in, that wouldn't surprise me at all.
Sean, look up that Everything is Awesome song for Amelia. I've got to say a big thanks to Sean Angus. He's making us all sound good on the other side of the glass in the studio. So wave when you go by the CGOB studios. Just give us a wave and we'll wave back if we see you. Okay, so Jeannie, the other thing I want to talk about before we get into your Gen Y book, you got a lot of books going on, but One thing that I think is really fascinating is that you're launching a fiction series as well. And I just think that's neat because obviously, I mean, you're a smart, talented woman, you're busy, you've got your professional thing going on, but there's this little piece of you that's doing something a little bit different. And I think exploring your passions is a really important thing for us to do to keep our lives in balance. So let's just talk for a minute about that.
Well, as you were saying, I have several nonfiction books and I would come across some information. I go, oh, geez, I'd like to talk about this, either a social issue or a place I'd like to talk about that I find fascinating or a family dynamic. But it didn't really lend itself to the work that I was currently doing. And so I started having these little pile of experiences and places and conflicts that I'd like to talk about. And from that, over the last 5 or 6 years, I created this idea about this ongoing mystery series about this character who's a traveling travel writer and travels all over the world and ends up in situations where she ends up solving mysteries accidentally. It's not that she's terribly smart. Okay. She's just accidentally in the right place at the right time. And so in the next couple of months, the first one will be coming out, which will be available through Amazon and Kindle.
So how exciting is that?
It is really cool. It's really
so
cool.
So you get to be somewhere you're not typically, right?
Correct.
So I'm super interested because I'm doing my own fiction thing happening too. It's just completely not who I am, not what I do, but you get to be somebody different.
Yes.
And do something completely different. So the reason I just want to throw it out to you folks is, you know, you're busy in your life. You're probably, you know, professionals, you're doing your top of your game. But exploring a passion that's not something you'd typically do just brings out a whole new creative side. It doesn't have to be writing a fiction book, but just try something different, do something different, and let a different side of you come out. And it affects your work life too, I bet.
Yes. Actually, I think it makes you more creative on your core work because it takes you into a different place totally.
Very cool. Back in a moment on Your Life Unlimited. Hey, it's Stephanie Staples with your quick tip of the week. Like it or not, the one thing that is certain in every life is change. We can squawk about it, we can buck it, we can deny it, but eventually we just have to roll with it. We can make it easier or harder on ourselves or others, depending on the mindset we bring to the situation. When we look back at the fear of loss of what we had sometimes kicks in. We got to focus forward and let the excitement and adventure propel us. Try this simple formula. I forgive myself for believing change has to be hard. I give myself permission to focus on what I'm gaining, not what I'm losing. I choose to support positive change in my life by looking forward to it. I am free to have a positive, supportive change happen easily in my life. An easy change that I made that worked out great was when I ... you fill in the blank. I am moving through change with ease from now on. It can be easy and focus on what you are creating to make that change a little more easy to accept. You've done it before. You can do it again. Now is the time to live your life unlimited. Welcome back to the show. And I want to thank vivacityfitness.ca for helping me. It's an ongoing battle to stay in shape. They help me. And if you need someone to help you too, it's hard to do it on your own. So feel free to check them out or get a workout partner or an accountability partner. Man, it's not one of these things you can just do for a month. It's a lifelong lifestyle change. So make it work for you so you can live your best life ever. I am speaking with Jeannie Martinson. She is in town from Saskatchewan. She is the author of her newest book. It's called Generation Y and the New Work Ethic. Jeannie, why this book? Why this topic? Why now?
Well, I think when we talk about generational differences, we're at this place now, basically a perfect storm. Two dynamics have come into play. One is for the first time, we really do have four generational groups in the workplace. We talk a lot about the baby boomers starting to retire, but we have traditionalists and baby boomers where they cusp. So the youngest of the traditionalists, the oldest of the baby boomers, they're still in the workplace. They're still major decision makers. They're influencing the workplace decisions for everyone from that mid-60s down to the earliest people in the workplace. So we need to still take traditionalists very seriously in the dynamic of the workplace. And the second piece is we are having, for the first time, a generational group come into the workplace, Generation Ys, who are fully digital. So they grew up in a digital world. They're not like Gen X's who are partially analog and partially digital, or baby boomers who grew up in an analog world, you know, where the clock went around in a circle.
And imagine that.
And so these two dynamics have created this perfect storm where people are going, what is going on? I don't get my workplace anymore. Who are these younger workers and how do they think they're going to get away with that? And younger workers saying, you know, these baby boomers, they're crazy people the way they work. And so for the first time, we've really had a disconnect as to the values and beliefs about how we work, how we look at time, how we look at money, how we look at authority, hierarchy, loyalty, communication, technology.
So is it just, I know it's sometimes driving the baby boomers crazy. Is it driving the Gen Y crazy too, or is it just the baby boomers that are?
Yes. Two quick examples. When a Gen Y comes to the workplace on a Monday morning, and they see the baby boomers talking about their weekend for the first half an hour around in the coffee room or where the coffee pot is. And they say, well, you know, we're supposed to be here at 8:30 and it's 9 o'clock and no one has done anything. Can't I just come in at 9?
That seems logical.
It seems logical to Gen Y. I was also talking to a fellow who is in his late 20s, very smart fellow, and he was working in the private sector and then was recruited into an NGO. And they couldn't really quite afford what he was making before. And so they gave him 7 weeks holidays instead of matching the salary. And so every 6 weeks or so, he takes a week's holidays.
Sweet.
And the rest of his team are baby boomers. And they're shocked that he's actually taking all these holidays. Oh, you're gone again. And he said, you know, not once do I say, oh, you took all your salary this month.
Good point.
Because a Gen Y looks at their time off equal to the paycheck, where a boomer looks at time off as something that if they don't take it, that makes them a better employee.
Right. So there is that. You talk about that medal of busy
yes.
in your book.
Yes. The idea, well, the baby boomers generation as a grouping, and of course you need to keep in context that generational information is only one slice of the onion that makes you who you are. When you look at an onion, all those layers, there's lots of things that might influence how it is that you behave in the world and in the workplace. Generational differences is one of them.
That's important that you know. Right? And that's an important.
Because, you know, you look at someone who's 24 who grew up on a mixed farming a farm with animals, and someone who's 24 who grew up in an urban environment with two parents who are salaried, that difference is going to be very significant as to how they see the world, how they see consequence, responsibility, accountability, for example.
So it's just one more way to help us
yes.
understand each other.
Yes. It's a way to identify when someone is having behavior that you go, I would never do that. Here's a way to kind of try to unbundle that understanding who that person is, and also unbundle how it is that we see ourselves. As part of that, I'm a cusper between Gen X and Gen Y because I was born in 1962. So I see the Gen X world and I see the boomer world different depending on the situation. But for people who are slightly older than I am, who might be in their late 50s, who are really a core baby boomer, they see how some Gen Ys behave in the workplace as unfathomable. They go in their mind, well, when I was their age, I would never have. And we really see this conflict in a serious way between apprentices and journeymen and journeywomen, particularly journeymen who are in their 50s, late 50s, early 60s, who have apprentices come in their first year and say, you know what? What you're doing is different than what I learned at tech school. Obviously, for 40 years, you've been doing it wrong. You should rethink that. And journeymen are saying, you know, for the first 2 years, I didn't even say anything to the journeyman who is training me. And the third year, the only thing I said was, how high do you want me to jump? So it's a whole different perspective as to how the relationships work in the workplace from an intergenerational perspective.
I like it. I like the word that you use, unbundle, right, when we're trying to figure out or dig. But I think even that's a great sign, is that we care enough to wonder, to be curious on, okay, why are they thinking like that? Or why am I not getting what they're... I think even just having that awareness, that foresight to ask ourselves the questions, even if we don't have the answers right there, it puts you in the top 3% of the population.
Well, and you use,
I totally
the,
just
you
made
use
that
the word,
up.
You use the word care. And I think in the sense, because generational differences is just one more form of diversity. And when we have diversity in the workplace, which we do everywhere, but the more different I am from you, the more likely, unless I'm aware of how I think and I understand who you are, I am going to have conflict with you. And unless we work on that conflict, unless one of us cares enough to start unbundling that, we spiral down into it's like, I can't even stand working with that person. My best week is the week they're on holiday. Right. You know, we don't want to spiral down to that place where the conflict is so intense that we are then costing our businesses, if we're the business owner, or costing the business that we work for to be unproductive, unprofitable, inefficient, ineffective. And that's the outcome of not being willing to understand the other perspective.
And not even costing the business, never our own mental sanity,
totally.
Right? Like, it's a long time that we spend at work if we're not happy or we have conflict or feeling panicky about going to work just because so-and-so is going to be there and we have to deal with them and deal with this project. So it's for our own sanity, for our own personal mental well-being that it's worth, you know, investing a little bit of time, energy, and educating ourselves on the process. You talk about this cusper, and there was a word in your book, I forgot the word now, but what you said about yourself, you're not quite a baby boomer.
Yes,
not quite.
Yes.
There was a new word that I had never heard before.
The word cusper means you're on the cusp of one generation. You're leaving one generation and you're on the cusp of the other. So if you're within 4 or 5 years of one generational group starting or ending, sometimes you go, this generational stuff, it doesn't make any sense to me.
That's how I feel.
And because if you're around 30, you're a Gen X, Gen Y cusper. If you're around 50, you're a Gen X boomer cusper. And so if you're in kind of around that age group, you might go, you know, I don't get this stuff. But someone who is 40 years old knows they're a Gen X.
Right. Someone, it was Joneser. That's the
Jonesers.
I had never heard
Zoomers.
That word before.
Yeah, Jonesers and Zoomers are terms that have been used. Jonesers is a political term. Zoomers is a marketing term. They're not demographic terms. They're not generational groups. Zoomers are people who are boomers who think that they just have too much life in them to be called a boomer. Part of that is because a lot of the boomer stuff we see in media really is geared towards how the oldest of the boomers behave.
Okay.
So I'm at the youngest of the boomers age group at 52. And so when they talk about boomers want this and boomers are concerned about that, well, not really. The oldest of the boomers are. Because I am in the younger decade of the boomers, some people in the younger decade of the generational group, which is almost 20 years, called boomers, when you're in this younger decade, you kind of go, you know, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I don't buy into that idea that I'm going to be in this economic group. I think we shouldn't be called boomers. We should be called Zoomers. And now we have a TV show with Conrad Black. God,
yeah, I'm liking that.
And so you know, we've created a commercialization around the word Zoomers. It's not a demographic word. It is around marketing and media.
On this TED Talk that I watched this morning, they were talking about the new middle age is going to be talking about going up to 85. And I was like, right on. That sounded good to me. Because people are so much healthier and so much more have so much more vitality. And I really bought into that. So back in a moment on Your Life Unlimited. And a big thank you to Calabria Market.biz, Southern Italian cuisine at its best. And there is no better food than Italian. I could be a little bit biased about that, given my heritage, but I think I'm right. I don't care what your background is. We are speaking with Jeannie Martinson. She is the author of the new book, Generation Y and the New Work Ethic. Well, I can't help but notice with Gen Ys, they do seem to need a lot of feedback.
Yes. And some people say kindly a hand-holding, but I don't think it's really so much hand-holding. It's really each generational group has been indoctrinated into expecting a certain amount of feedback, positive and negative. When I moved from Canada down to the United States, I was working for a fellow who would be a traditionalist. And after about 3 months working for him, I says, you know, I need to know, how am I doing? How am I doing? And he says, well, are you still employed here? And I go, yeah, I think so. And he goes, well, I guess you're doing okay. And that's what
there
we talk.
You go.
That's how you knew you were doing a good job. And then baby boomers kind of said, you know, at least once a year, I want to know I'm doing okay. That's how we got kind of the annual review.
Oh, okay, interesting.
And I want it written down somewhere that
I can
at this
see
point
it.
In time I was doing okay. And then Generation Y came into the workplace and they said, you know, it's not enough to know what my boss thinks because he might disappear, she might disappear. I want to know how everyone thinks about me. And that's, aha, the 360 feedback system was invented and embraced in the workplace. But Generation Y have been raised from the time that they were toddlers for that constant feedback and usually positive feedback. And that's why it's challenging from a manager's perspective or a supervisor's perspective because
we've been trained to do the whole feedback sandwich idea. You know, you can tell them something nice, hit them in the eyes, and then tell them something nice on the way out the door. And Generation Y, as a group, do not respond to that. They come out of the meeting and say, well, overall, I'm doing a good job. Apparently, you know, I'm okay.
So they didn't maybe hear the or feel that hit between the eyes.
And so with Generation Y, particularly, one of the things of making that change as far as feedback is give them positive feedback separate from negative feedback. And that kind of feels funny to us, especially if you're a boomer, to just give negative feedback. But how you give the feedback is really key. And I spend a lot of time with frontline managers, well, managers of all levels within organizations, but particularly people who have a lot of Gen Ys on their team, is when you give feedback, you need to talk about behavior, not evaluation or your interpretation. So you need to say, this is when it happened, like last Tuesday, yesterday morning, this morning at 3 a.m., whatever. You did this or you said this. And here was the negative consequences, the immediate negative consequence of that. And here is the longer term impact to our team, our organization, our customers, whatever. And what I want you to do instead is this. And this would be the positive consequences immediately. And here's the long-term positive impact to our team, et cetera, et cetera. Because a lot of Gen Ys don't have the ability, and that's because we haven't taught them how to problem solve like previous generations, because we surrendered the idea of free play. And Gen Ys were not taught, did not have the opportunity for free play. So they're not, you might say, don't do this anymore, but they don't know what they should be doing. Mm-hmm. So not only do you need to tell them what they're doing that you want them to change and why. It's not just your opinion. Here's the impact. Here's the consequence. But what you want them to do differently, and here's why.
So what I hear is very, very specific.
Yes.
It can't be too. And I'm just thinking, it doesn't, maybe it shouldn't matter what age you are. Like that would be, I'm just saying, yes. Having a conversation with my spouse, that's not a bad template.
Right. In all my leadership workshops, I teach that model. But what I have found, more than any other grouping, Generation Y needs it spelled out that specifically.
I'm just listening to my own words, what I just said. And I just said, that's not a bad template. And even that I just said that, was it was a compliment, but I framed it in a negative way. Rather than saying, that's a great template, I said, that's not a bad template, which is interesting.
Which makes me wonder that there's a great one out there that we haven't found yet.
Well, because I think I'm really picky about words. I think words are really, really important.
I agree.
And, you know, we keep putting those negative words in there. And if we can replace them with something positive, I think that we should. So the impact of the statement is similar, but I could frame it in a way that's more positive.
Well, and I think this is a more effective way to give feedback and to have the change that you want. There might be a more effective way than this one. But at this point, I'm finding that that a lot of people are finding it very useful. And in fact, in my workshops, I create an actual document. It's like, write it out so that when I'm sitting with someone who's in that generational group, I can basically say, on Tuesday when you did this, this is what happened. This is what the impact of that was. What I want you to do differently is this. And this is what will be the immediate positive impact of that. And this is how that will help our team.
It leaves little room for wondering or...
Because it's a new skill. Like when you give feedback to someone, we have our way of doing things, our unconscious way. You know how you drive. You drive unconsciously to work habitually. And so if you've been in any kind of position where you've been giving feedback, you have a way of doing that already. So to surrender the way you've been doing it and engage in this new way, it helps to have some tools to do that. And I actually, in the Gen Y book, I write out the actual process, because then people can really understand exactly what they have to do differently.
And if people want to find out more about your work, they can go to martrain.org.
Right.
Jeannie's done a great guest post for my blog, which I will post up tomorrow with the podcast of the show. And tons of great information there.
And the Gen Y book is at McNally Robinson here in Winnipeg.
Oh, great.
As well as online with Kobo and Kindle.
Perfect. Thanks so much. Back in a moment on Your Life Unlimited. Thank you so much for joining me today. This is no better way I'd want to spend my Sunday morning than chatting with you. If you like what you're hearing, go to yourlifeunlimited.ca. Lots of events, videos, articles, whatever you want. You know, this whole Your Life Unlimited thing, it's not just a one-hit wonder. We got to keep working at it all the time. And if you're ready to bring some coaching into your life, it's not just for other people, it's for you too. So I'd be happy to connect with you. yourlifeunlimited.ca. Hope to see you at the next Mo Mondays and the Caregiver event next week. I've been speaking with Jeannie Martinson. She's the author of Gen Y and the New Work Ethic. Jeannie, if there was just one thing you would want people to know, what would that be?
I think whether it's in your personal life or your volunteer life or your work life, when you see someone who behaves in a way that you don't understand, don't assume that they need to become like you. Ask yourself, you know, what am I not seeing there? And get a little curious and try to unbundle what that behavior is.
Get curious. Thank you so much for your time. As usual, it's Stephanie Staples encouraging you to live your life unlimited.